Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, imagination, and enchantment. I am Jim Freund. By phone, with me, critic Daniel Persons, and we're going to discuss media, and then at 3 a.m., a rebroadcast of the Wolf. Good morning again. This is Hour of the Wolf. I am Jim Freund. Let's check out Dan. Are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you better than I can hear myself. Which
gracious good evening. Is this party to who I am speaking?
Indeed.
I sunk a whole 20 bucks into a Lily Tomlin headset here, so.
Yes, exactly, and except she's far more nasal than that. At least, what was her name? Evangeline? No, not Evangeline.
I forget. Ernestine.
Ernestine. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. She was also far more talented, frankly. But you know, I deal with what I've got.
Yeah. Well, I never met Lily Tomlin, but I met Jane Fonda. So.
Ah.
Since they're coupled together on at least one project and supposedly another one coming up.
My wife and I...
9 to 5, 2.
My wife and I met Lily Tomlin backstage, sort of a stage door encounter for, what was it, The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe. We went to see that, and we got to have a few seconds with her. She was very sweet.
Yeah. I interviewed Jane Fonda, but anyway, I've shown you the photograph of that.
Oh yes, yes, you did.
I love that photo. Yeah. I need to make an announcement.
Feel free.
Thank you. So, and it is that next Tuesday, that would be the 8th, September 8th, at 6:30 p.m. We begin our next season of the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. And this is our silver anniversary. This is our 25th season. And we are eventually going to be doing fundraising for that through a crowdfunding for that, to be specific, through various, not various crowdfunding techniques. We're going to use Kickstarter. Right? We're going to use a very specific crowdfunding technique. And so we are starting out. It's going to be very, very different from any of the ones that you may have attended before. For one thing, outside of the events that we held last April, we are now permanently changed and permanently moved to 388 Atlantic Avenue, which, by small coincidence, is the same location is that of WBAI. However, if you come up to the third floor where WBAI is, you will be unable to get in. You want the main floor, the ground floor, the big place, the cafe. And in there, starting at 7 o'clock, Rajan Khanna and Michael Swanwick will be doing a reading. And there's more to that. First of all, admission is free. We stress that. But we also stress that we are, until we get that crowdfunding, and we're going to do the campaign in December so that we get the money from the crowdfunding in January. There are fiscal reasons to do this. It's really weird. If you get the money from the crowdfunding anywhere in 2015 and you are still paying out in the next year, you have to pay taxes on both years. It's really weird. So we're going to do the fundraising in 2015 and receive the funding in 2016 and retroactively pay people for doing things like readings and for the rent and all that, although I'll be paying the rent out of pocket until then. At any rate, the cafe here is really neat. It is large. We hold well over 100 people. And importantly, we have three robotic cameras. They're not robotically run. They're run by the very talented Terrence Taylor. And it's with wireless mics, so it's just people walking around and you can see and hear them live. This gives you no reason not to come. But, well, Dan, for example, you can watch it live.
And I shall.
Yeah, even though I may point out one of our readers is from Philadelphia. But all in all, you'd probably rather stay there.
Well, I would like to make some side trips back to New York every now and then, but I haven't been able to.
Well, that will be good, and when you do, we'll arrange to have you here. But, so let me read you the bios of the two people and then tell you how to get to the location and how to watch it online. First of all, Rajan Khanna. Rajan is an author, blogger, reviewer, and narrator. His first novel, Falling Sky, a post-apocalyptic adventure with airships, was released in October 2014. A sequel, Rising Tide, is due out in October 2015. His short fiction has appeared in Lightspeed magazine, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, and several anthologies. His articles and reviews have appeared at Tor.com and LitReactor.com. And his podcast narrations can be heard at Podcastle, Escape Pod, Pseudopod, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, and Lightspeed Magazine. Rajan lives in New York, where he's a member of the Altered Fluid Writing Group, and his personal website is Rajan Khanna, RajanKhanna.com, and he tweets as Rajan YK. I should mention that Rajan was once the post-production editor of Lightspeed magazine, but about almost two and a half years ago, I took over that position from him, and I'm now also the host. And as of last week, we have won two Hugo Awards in a row. So we are very pleased. Michael Swanwick is the other guy. Michael Swanwick has received the Hugo, Nebula, Theodore Sturgeon, and World Fantasy Awards for his work Station of the Tide, which was also honored with the Nebula Award and also nominated for the Hugo and the Arthur C. Clarke Awards. The Edge of the World was awarded the Theodore Sturgeon Memorial Award in 1989 and nominated for both the Hugo and World Fantasy Award. Radio Waves received the World Fantasy Award in 1996. The Very Pulse of the Machine received the Hugo Award in 1999, as did Scherzo with Tyrannosaur in 2000. His stories have appeared in Omni, Penthouse, Amazing, Asimov's, High Times, New Dimension, Starlight Universe, Full Spectrum, Tri-Quarterly, and elsewhere. Many have been reprinted in Best of the Year anthologies and translated for Japanese, Dutch, German, Italian, Portuguese, Swedish, Spanish, French, and Croatian publications. His latest novel, Chasing the Phoenix, is just out from Tor Books and continues the adventures of Dargar and Surplus as they continue ever east, this time passing through China. Well, we hope they make it through. Other books include In the Drift and A Special Vacuum Flowers, Griffin's Egg, Stations of the Tide, The Iron Dragon's Daughter, which was New York Times notable book, and Jack Faust and his short fiction. Gee, I think I'm missing one in there. One of my favorite books, which is not the sequel exactly to The Iron Dragon's Daughter, but similar, and that's The Dragons of Babel. Wonderful novel. Blah, blah, blah. And he's got a collection of short shorts, Cigar Box Faust, and other miniatures. And he lives in, where are you, Dan?
I am in Philadelphia.
So is he. Actually, he isn't right now, according to Facebook, but...
I was going to look out the window to see if I could see him.
Wouldn't be surprised.
He's everywhere. He's omnipresent.
Yeah. And he can be, he and Marianne can be a late nighter, so there. So that is that announcement. And two announcements, one of which relates directly to the program, and that is the death of Wes Craven, who, now you see, I am not, as Daniel knows, a fan of gory horror. Mm-hmm. And it is that realm in which Wes Craven ruled. John Carpenter, I dare say, gave it the kickoff, and I think was better as a director. But Wes Craven really booted the whole, ruled the roost when it came to clever slasher movies. And more important than that, to me, he did a couple of episodes of The Twilight Zone. Twilight Zone 2, that were just straightforward science fiction. One was a comedy. And he was very good at it. So, the other one is more recent news, and I only learned that on the bus coming here. And that, alas, is the passing of Dean Jones. And before people go, oh, yeah, right, the love bug and all these things, I say unto you, a wonderful performer of Sondheim's work, notably Company, in which he was Bobby, created the role of Bobby. Trying to remember if he was in production of Cabaret or not. I think he was one of the first people in Cabaret on Broadway. But he was simply a splendid, wonderful actor. He was in his 80s, and his passing is noted. Yes, he did a bleep load of bad Disney movies, and to that I say, he made good money.
I tortured my mother by making her sit through two screenings of The Monkey's Uncle.
Oh, God, yeah.
The woman was a saint, I tell you.
Yeah, really. The one that I remember that I made my mother sit through was The Cat from Outer Space.
Ooh.
It was a bad one. It was real bad, but it was at Radio City Music Hall, and it was Dean Jones, and I had a wonderful time.
Yeah. Your mother, not so much.
It was a family outing. I think she enjoyed that fact, you know?
Mm. Okay.
So that's more or less what it came down to. So we are. Oh, and I mentioned, of course, all those credits for Michael Swanwick. I should point out that at 3 a.m., as I leave these physical premises, I'm going to leave behind, in place of Lister, I'm going to be broadcasting an old episode of Hour of the Wolf with the aforementioned Michael Swanwick. So you can listen to that, but, you know, and how to watch. I didn't mention how to watch. You go to livestream.com, okay? And when you get there, there are two choices, broadcast or watch. Well, you know, you can broadcast if you like, but in this particular case, I think you will want to click on watch. And then you just do a search for NYRSF. You know how to spell that. It's NYRSF. Just that. That stands for the New York Review of Science Fiction, NYRSF. And you will see a number of choices. In fact, if you were to do it now, there are three readings there that you could enjoy, including Samuel R. Delaney and R. Jemison and all these wonderful folk. But we will be starting out live with our new season next Tuesday live. Okay, sorry, Dan. Dan.
Hello. And by the way, let me just apologize if it sounded like I was presuming that I was granting you permission to make announcements on your own show.
No, not at all. And in a way, you are more or less co-hosting this program.
Oh, wow. So our next caller is from Cincinnati. Cincinnati, hello.
Hello.
Oh, yes, and I will tell people, you see, here's the deal. We got one phone line. We cannot take phone calls, but I have been setting up my phone. I'm doing all of this various stuff to try to make this place functional for radio, that is to say, so I can actually be, you know, doing things. And since we can't take listener calls while we have you on, what I am going to be doing is you can send us email. You can send me an email to jfreund@wbai.org, an email address I have never used.
until tonight.
Until tonight, that is correct. But there is... if I used Facebook, it wouldn't necessarily get through. If I used jfreund@ourwolf.com, it goes to a different server that sometimes regards certain stuff as spam, and then it doesn't go to my client on my phone. But I can get jfreund@wbai.org. on my phone, no problem. I can be signed in more places than once at the same time. And yes, of course, the computer that we have here can't be trusted to be on the internet. Sigh. So that's why this setup. And if I sound like I'm doing 90 other things while I'm talking to you, it's not true. It's only 79. 1 second.
But we'll be working up to the 90 through the next hour and a half.
Yes. But let's see. Ooh, okay, yes. See, there's three computers in here. One you can broadcast from, and that's great. But the other one, but that one isn't online. The one that is online, which I was just successfully able to log into Google Music, where I get my music from. Never mind. So now if I want to play a song that I don't have, like one from Dean Jones, which is exactly what I have planned. Oh, there, I gave it away, didn't I? I found it.
Okay.
Good. Okay,
Can I say something, by the way, since you sort of put yourself out in the wilderness on Wes Craven, and let me just say that, well, first off, it's a genuine loss, both as a person and as far as the art is concerned. I did interview him one time. He was a wonderful interview and a very intelligent man.
He had a reputation for being a lovely guy.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just say he was not my favorite among that group of directors.
Who are the other directors in that group?
I would say John Carpenter, definitely.
He's first and foremost, I would say.
I would say so. Don
Coscarelli. I don't even appreciate the subgenre, but, you know, it's Carpenter.
Yeah.
It's all about Halloween.
Yeah. And maybe Don Coscarelli came out, Phantasm came out pretty much simultaneously, I think, with Halloween.
Oh, I actually saw Phantasm. That's one of the things that made me avoid slasher movies. That's a compliment.
And
well, it is.
And maybe a little later in the cycle, but I would also put in David Cronenberg.
Cronenberg is a brilliant movie maker.
Yeah.
And not all of his films are slasher or gory. And I was actually able to sit and giggle through Scanners, which really only has one controversial scene. And it's so ridiculous that I just laughed at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
I mean, if you can watch a balloon pop.
Then
you can watch Scanners. And Scanners is not a bad science fiction film.
It's very good. He tended to do very good stuff, very controversial stuff. They came from within, among his earlier films, They Came From Within and Videodrome.
Videodrome is a fine movie.
Yeah.
And truly scary.
Truly scary, tremendously surreal. Getting back to Wes Craven, I think one of the good things that he really did was Nightmare on Elm Street, and basically because he brought an element of the surreal into the idea of the slasher film, mm-hmm. which they didn't really have before that. And he also brought a bit of personality to the slasher. You know, prior to that, we had Jason and we had Michael Myers, and they were just hulking presences. When we get to Freddy Krueger, there is at least a semblance of personality in the film that Wes Craven was involved with. Of course, what the personality that people remember as the Freddy Krueger personality, Wes Craven wasn't really involved
mm-hmm.
in any of that. When it came down to turning the character into a guy who made bad puns as he killed people. That was beyond Wes Craven. He also tried to bring the character back and justify the reason for genuine horror films in Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which hasn't gotten a lot of love, but I think it was a heartfelt attempt by him to explain why you needed genuine horror in film.
Yeah, although you see, my definition of genuine horror runs closer to Babadook or mm-hmm. The Haunting.
Well, yeah.
Which are not splatter films.
They're not splatter films. I would agree with you there, but I do think, and we've had this conversation before, I do think
I know, but I'm grandstanding for the audience.
Why not?
It's not a joke. Not everybody listens every week.
Yeah, that's
true. I should hope. And so I need to mention that.
Yeah, yeah. And as before, I mean, my position is that horror, graphic horror, splatter does have a place in film. I'm not, I'm not a particular gore hound as far as it's concerned, but when it's deployed correctly and deployed well, I think it's got a, it's got a definite place in the horror genre. That's my take on it, anyway.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about something else, because a couple of weeks ago you were talking about the World Fantasy Awards.
I was talking about all the awards, yes.
Yeah, but you were talking about the World Fantasy Award and the controversy over using the likeness of H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
And you had actually suggested, you know, doing something more, shall we say, generic or
now, I have more to say that I don't actually have a problem with showing Lovecraft, but this is an ongoing large controversy that the science fiction, well, for the fantasy community is having.
Yeah.
In fact, what was going on there is that somebody, more than a couple of people, actually suggested that the Lovecraft figure be replaced with that of Octavia Butler.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is politically a lovely, nice little thought, except for one problem. Octavia Butler never wrote a word of fantasy in her life. She only ever wrote science fiction.
Hmm.
And my thinking is, if you are going to replace Lovecraft, and just because he was this horrid human being, I don't think that's the reason, especially when you're dealing with horror and fantasy, to have to change it. It's like, yes, he was, name it, he was it. He was an ist. He was an ist. He was so bad.
Race, gyne, misog,
Brooklyn. He particularly hated Red Hook. He wrote The Horror of Red Hook, in which he referred to black people as mud people, the mud people. He was an ist, and, you know, my opinion was that he wrote horror because he genuinely wanted to scare the bejesus out of people.
Mm-hmm.
He really, really wanted to frighten them.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's basically it. He was a horrible person. So all I was saying is, if in fact somebody should decide, the committee, whoever is in charge, and I'm not as familiar with the workings of the World Fantasy Award, if they should decide to replace the World Fantasy Award from Lovecraft to something else, I say make it something iconic rather than a person.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing, is that when you put that forward, you had given as examples dragons for one and unicorn.
Well, unicorn was actually somebody else's suggestion.
Okay.
And dragons, I'm sure other people came up with dragons, but dragon is the one that I came up with.
Okay. But you see, and it sort of surprises me that you would suggest those without having been aware of, you know, the dark background of those icons as well. I mean, you know, like dragons, you know, notorious anti-Semites.
They have been used that way by Wagner, although, you know, not nowhere near as much as the Nibelung themselves. And, of course, Tolkien copied that both with Smaug, but not as much as the dwarves.
Right.
And Terry Pratchett did the same thing with the dwarves. Dwarves are really the anti-Semitic thing in fantasy.
But, you know, in an early draft of The Hobbit, the first thing that Smaug says to Bilbo is, "Are you a Jew?"
So I've heard. So I've heard. By which he means a dwarf.
And by the way, unicorns, pederasts, all of them.
And, yeah, I'm sure, but not as much as Barbie dolls.
I don't want to get into that.
We really, and if you really want to get into that kind of a thing, think My Little Pony.
You know
about gronies.
Oh my God! Yes, sure I do.
Yeah. So.
And have you ever watched any of the My Little Pony cartoons?
No.
I failed to see the appeal. It's nice that they feel it's delivering a positive message and all of that, but I can cite you any number of other kid-based cartoons that are better, that have more interesting storytelling.
She-Ra.
Not a little more recent than that. I mean, I would put forward to you Adventure Time. Steven,
you know, I have never gotten Adventure Time, I must say.
Have you watched any of them?
Yeah, I have. I wouldn't have said that otherwise. I have watched Adventure Time a couple of times. I thought it was clever. I thought that it had its moments. I'm not particularly fond of the lack of animation, although the drawings are fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the style to copy the Japanese style, which is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And
they actually brought in a one of the more avant-garde of Japanese anime directors to direct. Guest direct one of their episodes, and it actually turned out to be quite an incredible episode. And I think it's either called, I think, The Food Circle or The Circle of Life, on that order.
There was one of the shows that I saw that I really liked more than the others, and it dates, you know, predates that, would be Cowboy Bebop.
Cowboy Bebop.
Bebop, sorry.
Cowboy Bebop, which is
Cowboy Bebop, I thought had some grounding to it.
We talked about this. Have you yet to see Pierrot Le Fou?
No.
Okay. So people
only with Jean-Paul Belmondo.
No. This is actually a Cowboy Bebop episode. So people know it's a Japanese anime series. Every now and then they run it on Adult Swim, although I think it's been a while since they've run it there. It may be available on one of the streaming services. Netflix,
yeah,
if
it is available, that is how I will see it.
Yeah.
I don't look out for particular episodes on scheduled TV anymore. I watch pretty much. I haven't quite cut the cord yet because I haven't found the cord, the uncord that mm-hmm. has Turner Classic Movies.
Mm-hmm.
But once I find Turner Classic Movies on a service, mm-hmm. I will be cutting the cord.
Yeah. So, But let me tell people what Cowboy Bebop is, so just so they know.
And then we should get to our topic. Yes.
Yes, we should. So, but yeah, let me just say, Cowboy Bebop is about a space bounty hunter that's set in this fantastic multicultural universe with a fantastic soundtrack, and I forget the woman who composed the music, but it goes from jazz to blues to rock. And every episode has a particular musical theme or leitmotif, even, if you want to think of it that way. The animation is great. The storytelling is great. The episode I'm talking about, Pierrot Le Fou, comes late in the series, and the character who, here again, it's been a while since I've actually seen it. I believe his name is Spike Spiegel. He's the main bounty hunter. There are several of them. But he crosses paths with a remorseless serial killer called the Mad Pierrot, who in the cartoon, he is sort of this roly-poly specter with this hideous rictus of a smile. And he is essentially indestructible and essentially unstoppable. Once he has targeted you, in theory, you're dead. And it is one of the freakiest episodes you will ever see, with a finale, a showdown set in an abandoned theme park at the end that just keeps getting more and more insane. It's an incredible episode.
I will seek it. I have ways of seeking such things.
So can I report to you about Z for Zachariah?
Yes, absolutely. And okay. First thing we need to do is tell people that this is in no way, shape, or form related to the Western, the apocalyptic Western called Zachariah.
Absolutely not.
Do you remember that film?
No, I do not.
Ooh, well, it was written by and slightly starred the Firesign Theater.
Ah.
So it's an early 70s film, and it's a real movie directed by members of the Firesign Theater, and it's not good enough to have made a cult film. And there are a lot of us out there who love the Firesign Theater, but there was an apocalyptic cult science fiction movie called Zachariah. So when I heard about Z for Zachariah, I'm going, uh-huh. No relation.
No relation, and God knows, nowhere near the quality. So let me just I'll have to apologize because I meant to go to a screening and I couldn't get to it, and only yesterday I discovered that it was actually available through pay-per-view. So you don't actually have to go out to see it. You can.
Went pretty directly to video, as it were.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can just stay home, and it should be, if you've got your digital cable service, you should probably be able to watch it there. So in any case, so I wasn't able to womp up like a fully reasoned review, but I just wanted to give some impressions about the thing. The actual plot itself is something that we've encountered before. It's like after some kind of nuclear holocaust, there are two men, and they may well be the last men on Earth, and they vie for the attention of what may be the last woman on Earth. It's set in this valley that's isolated from the radiation. So you can look at it as a kind of a bucolic, the world, the flesh, and the devil. You remember that film?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, with Harry Belafonte and Mel Ferrer tussling over Inger Stevens.
Nowhere near as good as The Quiet Earth, but go on.
Yeah, okay. It's been a long time since I saw that.
Rewatch The Quiet Earth. It's a superb film.
In any case, I only watched the film today, and to be quite frank, I've got a lot of very, very nuanced kind of thoughts that I haven't really been able to sift through. So I'm going to try to do the film justice and give you as best I can, the complex thoughts that were running through my mind while I was seeing this film. I despised it. It's like
don't hold back now.
It's like every 5 minutes it found new ways to be contemptible, and that's somewhat admirable, I guess. But You know, and the real problem with it, and it boils down to the characterization of the woman at the center of all of this. The character's name is Anne. She's played by Margot Robbie. By the way, the two men are played by Chiwetel Ejiofor and Chris Pine. Yes, Captain Kirk.
Yes, and I have to admit, by the way, that when I saw who the cast was, I thought, okay, that might be really interesting. I mean, these are people who I really like, all of them. And Chris Pine, all the more, after having seen Into the Woods, in which he's incredible.
In their defense, they all do well with what they are given.
And
but what they are given,
if I say it correctly, you know, yes, I know he's done great movies since. Yes, I know he's an important actor. But come on, let's face it, Serenity.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. So the problem that I did have, or one of the big problems, was the characterization of this woman, Anne. And basically, what she boils down to, you think we'd get to the point where the character would be something more than the ball that gets lobbed around by these two characters. And quite frankly, she isn't really that. And I think the problem there is that here, Margot Robbie, she's I think, like, 25 years old, and I'm watching the film, and I'm going, this woman is tremendously naive. There's like one point where Ejiofor's character makes an oblique reference to repopulating the Earth, and it goes completely, and it isn't all that oblique. It's rather obvious what he's talking about there, but it goes completely over her head, and I went from, wow, she's naive, to, boy, she's really stupid. And then I realized, no, maybe she's not actually 20-something. Maybe she's actually supposed to be younger. Maybe she's actually supposed to be like 16 or something like that. And that seemed to be confirmed later. In the film, Chris Pine has a line where he essentially says that she acts a lot older than she is. So here we are, and we've got the situation where we've got a 30-something-year-old man, and Chris Pine's character... Here again, Chris Pine is no teen, clearly, but he may well be playing a teen as well. And so, you know, they're vying over this woman, what is essentially a 16-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're really trying to do. But the point for me is that you can do that. I mean, you can tell that story. And, you know, as much as people go, there is a way of doing it. But, it it's like what I was talking about last week when I was reviewing When Animals Dream and what I said about the rape sequence. If you're going to do it, you've got to commit to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the same thing here. You know, the problem of the film, I think, is that it sort of steps to the line and then backs itself out of it. And so instead of casting an actress that looks like a genuine teenager, they go with this 20-something actress to sort of, I guess, cover their butts. There's even...
But this is what the movie industry does in general. They make a movie about... Concussion, I believe, is the name of the film, about people, football players, and what happens to them and their brains and all that. And then they back away from saying, oh, it's actually not about concussions. It's actually not football's fault. And well, of course it is.
Yeah, well, yeah, but that's the problem here, is that with this particular film, if they're going to have an adult character in that role, then she should be portrayed as an adult. If they're going to have a child a teenage character in the role, then if they do that, then they also have to make the character a genuine character. One of the problems with this film is that basically these are all cardboard sort of characters. Anne's main beat is that she is naive. Mm. You know, and so when the buff Chris Pine character shows up, she is like, what are these feelings I am having? And frankly, Glee is more honest and more insightful about teenage characters than this movie is. And you know, the person who directed it, Craig Zobel, did another film that I saw called Great World of Sound. He also did this film Compliance, which I haven't seen, but he did this film Great World of Sound. And this is sort of the way he treats his characters, is that they are sort of cardboard figures without anything that makes them genuine, unique human characters. So basically, I got, even before Chris Pine shows up, you're watching these characters interact with each other, and I was getting to the point where I was saying, gee, if only a zombie would come up over the ridge and take care of these people, and then we could get on to somebody interesting.
Yeah, right.
You know, so... that was, and by the way, here again, talking about committing, Ejiofor's character commits an act that is genuinely despicable, and the film does not have the stones to actually show us the act, and even in some ways sort of intimate that maybe he did the act. Maybe he did not, and I resented
that's,
that.
That's
as
a problem.
Much.
If you leave that ambiguity there,
yeah,
with such an act, then you are leaving it open for the victim to be the guilty party.
Yeah, yeah, and in this particular case, that couldn't have been that would not have been the interpretation in this particular case, but it basically is backing out of having the character own the responsibility for what happens.
Yeah,
you know, and it, so. You know, for all of those reasons, I really despise this film. This film is not quite as despicable as The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, but it gets sort of...
That's a pretty despicable movie.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I did.
You did?
I actually did watch that. Knowing how I would feel going in, and I watched it largely to confirm that it was as bad as I was afraid it would be.
Yeah, I sort of resent films that go, huh? The Holocaust, pretty bad, huh? And I'm sitting there going, yes, I know it's bad. I didn't need for you to tell me that.
Yeah, but it's not just that. It's the attitude of the Holocaust and an almost like awe trivialization while depicting a horror at the same time.
Yeah.
And for the record, I am the product of two Holocaust survivors who, you know, with more than 30 direct, I mean, you know, no further than my parents' immediate relatives having been murdered.
So if people want to play, I don't often
pull out the identity card.
Mm-hmm.
But and I may be the only one at WBAI, mm-hmm. but I thought I'd pull that one out.
Yeah, while I don't know my family tree, I cannot imagine that there were certain branches of my family that also met unfortunate fates.
Yeah,
in the Holocaust, I was going to say we all, but not everybody does, but. Quite a few people.
I am familiar with the fate of over 30 people in my direct family.
Yeah.
So. With evidence. So.
In any case, so I would not be recommending Z for Zachariah.
Hmm. Okay, fair enough. So within the genre, what are the worst movies of the summer?
I would say Z for Zachariah
mm-hmm.
was one. I did not see Fantastic Four. I understand that would be a contender. I did not have much love for Jurassic World. I felt that they were trying to sneak in something about the state of tentpole pictures, but they sort of lost themselves in actually fulfilling what they felt was the mandate for tentpole pictures mm-hmm. these days. So there was stuff where in that film I could go, oh yeah, I see where you're going there in revising what was done in Jurassic Park, but there was more of a sense of them bowing to their corporate masters than there was of them sort of sneaking
in.
Would
you say it was really a bad movie?
Yeah. Yeah. I did not like it. Yeah. I was bored. I was frankly bored with it.
That's more to the point in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was gonna, so that's three.
Right.
And you don't have to do more than three. Three is a good number.
I will give you a curious one because everybody will say, what? No. And I don't want to say the worst, but I mean, I did have problems with it, which was Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't asking for the worst. I was just saying bad, you know, films, bad films.
Bad films.
And while I have not yet seen Mad Max Fury Road, and I intend to see it, I know too many people who thought it was astonishing.
I can understand that. A lot of people felt that way, and quite frankly, I can see what they see in it. There's a lot that's tremendously inventive. There's a lot that's bold and innovative and daring and stunning, and it did absolutely nothing for me. It was like, and I was trying. I was sitting there in the theater and sort of squirming in my seat and going, this is fun, and it just wasn't happening.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that I enjoyed some of the aspects of the first two Mad Max films and mm-hmm. none of the third.
Yeah, nobody particularly likes Thunderdome.
Yeah, and but I appreciate what George Miller tries to do.
Yes, I do too. You know, and I hope he goes on doing it. A lot of
I'm still waiting though for Mad Max Meets Babe.
Yeah. Given the post-apocalyptic world, we're talking about Mad Max Meets Babe when there's a spit sticking through its mouth.
Yeah.
Babe doesn't last long in Mad Max's world.
No, I don't. I don't think so. I don't think so. He's as needed as petroleum.
My feeling is, George Miller, go on, keep on doing what you do, and hopefully at some point we'll sync up.
Yeah. Yeah, and some things will work and some things may not as much.
Yeah, yeah.
But I respect him
for what he does at the very least, even if I didn't particularly enjoy the film. I forget who it was. I think it was John Ordover on, and if I'm wrong in this, John Ordover, forgive me. But I think it was John Ordover who wrote after he had seen the film, maybe this is just not a film for me. And I sort of feel that way.
Which is a fair review.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a critique, it's a review.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You know, as opposed to Craig Zobel, whom I could probably at this point do with never seeing another film of his.
Yeah. So, flip that around. What are the better films of the year?
Inside Out.
Absolutely. Have you seen Raleigh's First Date yet?
No, I have not. Is that a new Pixar?
It's a short.
Short, yeah. No, I have not seen that.
It is what will undoubtedly be an extra in the DVD version of Inside Out, doubtless due any month now. But it has been playing in theaters.
Huh.
And it's, you know, an 8-minute short. And the title says it all, Riley's First Date.
Right.
And I loved Inside Out. It's not Pixar's best. It's in their top five.
Yeah. There are flaws to it. As I mentioned in my review, and I think this is sort of something that seems to be cropping up in Phil Doctor's work. Phil Doctor was, I think he co-directed Inside Out, but he was one of the directors of it, is that it's sort of toward, they tend to be a little overloaded with stuff. It's like he says, you know, like, let's keep packing stuff in there. And in Inside Out's defense in this particular case, it's that he is trying as much as possible to find metaphors for all the aspects of personality.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets into a lot of different types of stuff. You know, you got theme park lands and library archives and, you know, like railroads. And it gets to be a little much and a little chaotic as far as understanding.
Well, there's a problem with many, many movies, period. And mm-hmm. Pixar, being an animation company, is one of the companies that is particularly rife for this problem. Movies must be 90 minutes.
Yeah.
They won't allow 40-minute movies. They won't let you make two Pixar 40-minute movies and a short and mm-hmm. release that as A Night with Pixar.
Yeah.
So, I was discussing Pete Doctor's previous feature-length film.
Yeah, it was Pete Doctor. I said Phil Doctor. Sorry about
that.
Yeah,
Pete Doctor. And his previous film is Up.
Mm-hmm.
And Up, the first 20 minutes of Up are the best 20 minutes that Pixar has ever produced.
Yeah.
It is.
And those first 20 minutes are the thing that everybody is talking about when they talk about Up.
Yeah, absolutely. And then all of a sudden, it's followed by a cartoon. And where you have just been bittersweetly devastated
mm-hmm.
by this opening.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you get to Zeppelins.
Yeah.
And you get to Zeppelins.
You get to the mad archaeologist, is he?
Whatever he is, the mad.
Whatever he is, the mad scientist.
The former hero, mad scientist. And you do have great dogs.
When it got to the point where it was dogs and biplanes, and I understand dogfight, ha ha. But when you get to the idea of dogs and biplanes, I'm going, okay, you've lost a little bit of control here.
The dogs were really good, and now my favorite Pixar film, and I was having this mm-hmm. conversation with a friend of a younger generation than I. Mm-hmm. She ain't ancient. She ain't that young either. And my favorite Pixar film, bar none, is WALL-E.
Mm.
And she had a big problem with it. And her problem was, and I totally see her point, again, the first 45 minutes of WALL-E
mm-hmm.
is just amazing. It breaks cinema in and your expectations of animation and so many things in so many ways, and it is absolutely utterly brilliant. But
they did with a computer animated film what Kubrick did with 2001 for 45 minutes, no dialogue at all.
Yeah, well, there's a little bit of music.
Yeah, there's music, but no real dialogue.
There's no spoken dialogue. There's no other character.
Through image and mise-en-scène.
Yes, absolutely. But when it gets off Earth,
mm-hmm.
Okay, yes, it continues the story well. It doesn't totally break away the way that mm-hmm. Up does and become a totally different movie. Mm-hmm. However, the look and feel of that part of WALL-E is a disconnect
mm-hmm.
from the opening, and while I'm happy and we return to Earth at the end, spoiler, then it's all abundantly okay. But the problem is that the animation style is so different in the ABA. The B is mm-hmm. so different from the, and that was her objection.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit that she has quite a point.
It's been a while since I've seen WALL-E. I didn't quite sense a break in the animation.
Well, it's very simple. The parts that are on Earth mm-hmm. could practically be film.
True.
It's got a texture, it's got a feel, it's got the kind of thing where you get lost and start forgetting that you're watching a cartoon, that you're watching animation. You're not even aware that it's animation.
They had brought in an actual cinematographer, and I forget which one, but a very well-known one,
mm-hmm.
To consult on the Earth sequences.
And
they very deliberately wanted a filmic look.
And this is something that the director had been working on to the point where they used that same technique and his technique and he as the director in order to make John Carter,
mm-hmm.
which I consider an underrated movie. And I don't think it's a great movie, but I think that it breaks new ground in many ways and is not.
I had lots of trouble with it, and maybe I need to go back to it to watch it again. I know a lot of people
Okay, but that's not the point.
Yeah, right.
The point is that the first 45 minutes of WALL-E is mm-hmm. what sets the scene for the technology that is able to make John Carter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, you have to deal there with the idea of, I would say terrain, except it's not Terra, it's Mars, but it's Barsoom. But that's how it was done. And that technology was created in WALL-E, and it's amazing. But once you get aboard ship, it does become a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And this...
good cartoon, we should
A very out. Good one. I enjoyed it. Remember, I claim WALL-E to be one of the 10 best films of the first 10 years of this millennium.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking science fiction. Period. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great, wonderful movie, but I see her point, that it doesn't sustain itself from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Minions? I don't think you...
Missed Minions, and I, frankly, Minions was the week that also, what was it, and this was one that I should have cited as a bad film. Oh, and I can't remember the title now. It's the one where Ben Kingsley changes bodies.
Iron Man 3. No.
No, not Iron Man. Not quite.
Not quite, but close.
Let me see.
Yeah, it was sort of a variant.
Selfless.
Right.
That
but,
was the
but,
film.
I saw
it,
Minions.
It was
I
the
saw,
same week as that.
I'm talking
and,
about Minions.
Yeah, here's why. I just wanted to explain why.
I'm talking about Minions.
Same week, and I said to myself, well, I've got Minions, and I've got Self/List, and Self/List is being directed by Tarsem, who's this visual stylist, and it's also, quote-unquote, the more serious of the science fiction film. So I went to see Self/List, and I was dis/appointed. So
okay, so all that aside, I'm talking about Minions.
Minions.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Of the three films in the Despicable series, it is the best.
Mm-hmm.
It is clever. It does what most animated kiddie films should do. It aims for the grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And it does so in a manner that that kids will enjoy. So kids will not necessarily understand as they see the Minions grouping together and the opening song is Happy Together. They won't, get the bit about the turtles.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful outro. There's only one song that the movie Minions could go out on. And, okay, I'll spoil it. Mellow Yellow.
Okay.
Right, and all the songs are from... It's maybe the best soundtrack of the year so far, mm-hmm. and all songs from within, 5 years of those two that I mentioned. It's got the Stones, it's got Cream, it's got Hendrix, it's great. And the movie is funny and clever, so... And by the way, as far as Hour of the Wolf reviews are concerned, I don't mind if a movie isn't this week's movie.
Hmm.
I don't even mind if the movie is several years old, if it's worth discussing.
I will catch up with the Minions because, quite frankly, I really wanted to see the Minions.
It's just Minions, by the way, not the Minions.
Minions, and, okay.
And it is, I believe it is now available, but let's just say that, actually, I saw it legally at home.
Okay. I did want to throw in something which isn't really connected with Minions the movie, but maybe reflects on this genre overall, is that before the movie opened, I saw this commercial and the Minions were in it. And, they were fooling around and they were doing their Minion sort of stuff. And they had like this tube of yogurt and they were using it to become like an airplane. It was an airplane propeller and they were flying around and that sort of stuff. And then I looked again and I realized it wasn't actually the Minions. It was actually a couple of Happy Meal boxes from McDonald's. And then
no doubt it was a tie-in, though.
Well, here's the thing, is then a few weeks later, there was another Happy Meal commercial, and the Minions were in it.
Yeah.
So every now and then, you sort of get awakened to the fact that while we look at these things and they're cute, adorable characters, to certain corporate interests, they're something else completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact that the McDonald's Happy Meal boxes could be the Minions and vice versa, that sort of says something about the way, you know, the corporations that run these studios look at these characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so,
that
was my epiphany.
Yeah, but that's just marketing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm aware of it, and I'm aware it's always going to exist. You just don't, at times, see it as starkly as all of as that. Can I talk about the film that was the biggest disappointment?
Yeah, and then we should get to the other side of the year. But go ahead.
What's coming up? Yeah, because
yes.
We're running fast out of time. Let me just say, and we can sum it up quick. The film that was the biggest disappointment for me was Tomorrowland.
Yeah, which I have yet to see.
I was
really, really, really looking forward to it, and I will see it when it comes around on the smaller screen.
I was looking forward to seeing it. I would, and it is in a lot of ways a fun film. There are a lot of sequences that are great. There are a lot of sequences that are wonderfully, that use wonderfully deployed special effects and action. So it's a lot of fun. As a story, it doesn't hold together. They drop the ball as far as what their themes were concerned. After I had seen the film and after I had recorded my review, I started looking into some of the other reviews of this, and there is some discussion on the web and elsewhere about sort of the Ayn Randian bent that the film seems to suggest. There is this notion that they were talking in particular about the fact that this seems to be a strand running through Brad Bird's films, there's a central notion of the Superman or the creative genius being suppressed by the petty small rabble.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be very clear in The Incredibles. They've cited it.
Would
in
you say that's true in Ratatouille?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. and here it comes up again in Tomorrowland, and it goes to the extent that, as the story goes, essentially all the great geniuses of the 20th century, you know, Edison and Tesla, all those people essentially go galt and create their own little society in another dimension from which to dispense their greatness. Now, Brad Bird and Carlton Cuse have both vehemently denied that's what they were trying for. It's still an interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, may not have been trying for it. Doesn't mean that it doesn't show up.
Yeah, yeah.
And Carlton Cuse, still my favorite thing of Carlton Cuse is probably now I'm blanking on the name of the TV series, science fiction western, cult classic.
Briscoe
County.
Oh, Briscoe County. I've yet to see that. I've seen a few episodes of that.
Oh,
I need to see more.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you want to talk about weird, bizarre, wonderful, cultish things.
Right.
We have 10 minutes in which to discuss everything coming up.
Everything that's coming up. So, yeah, as far as film is concerned.
And,
so let's...
and I wouldn't mention, you know, there is a glut of television.
Yeah, there is. There is. And... okay, but you know, let's talk about the one that, you know, let's face it, is at the forefront of everybody's mind.
There are two at the forefront, and they both have stars.
I'm not sure about the second star. I know the first star.
One is Trek. One is Wars. Oh no, there's no Trek.
No, Trek isn't this year.
Oh, that's right. What am I thinking? There's only one star. Star Wars.
No studio would do that.
I don't think they would.
But yes, but there is this year. There is Star Wars Episode VII: The Force Awakens.
Yeah, there's also
coming up.
Yeah,
and I will admit it. Yes, I am very excited.
I'm intrigued. You know, I was. Problem is, I've been burned out. Because I'm old enough to have gone to see Star Wars. There's only one movie called Star Wars in the theater. They renamed it later, I understand, to A New Hope. But I saw that in the theater as Star Wars, not A New Hope, more than 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to see The Empire Strikes Back opening day. And I used credentials to do that, although I went with everybody else. I just skipped the line. And that was amazing. And while I will acknowledge people saying that Empire Strikes Back may be the better movie, it's not the one that presses the buttons as much as A New Hope.
Never did for me. Never did for me either.
Yeah, and then the third movie is a major disappointment.
I actually enjoyed Return of the Jedi.
I'm not saying there isn't good stuff in there, but yeah. Revenge of the Jedi, okay, and there's all this stuff and there's all this...
You're going to stick with Revenge of the Jedi, are you?
I'm going to stick with the treatment that was written by Lee Brackett, okay?
Okay.
Lee Brackett... came in on Empire and worked out the concept of three trilogies, that they would be films 4, 5, and 6, and then 1, 2, and 3, and then 7, 8, and 9, and in the middle of writing Empire Strikes Back, she died.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But she had come up with the most basic treatment, for Revenge of the Jedi. That's where it comes from. It's not a rumor, okay? Mm-hmm. She wrote, she conceived that. It was set on the Wookiee planet. Now, the marketeers take one look at that and they say, Wookiees, we can't sell Wookiees. They're not cute. They're not adorable. So let's take the Wook and the E and let's reverse that. Ewok.
Ewoks.
And the plot was totally thrown away.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It had more plot than Empire Strikes Back, dude.
It may have, and I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but I'm a diabetic.
Just can't get around those Ewoks, can
you? You just can't. You just can't. On the other hand... There's that bikini. But anyway...
It doesn't look like there's going to be any Ewoks. It doesn't look like there's going to be any Jar Jar.
So, and that was going to be the next thing. So, let's go back a few years, or let's go forward a few years, and we're waiting, and then, bing, The Phantom Menace, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be brilliant, and it sucked.
Yeah.
It sucked.
Yeah. And I was thrilled that Lucas was... getting back to directing, because here again, I thought A New Hope was the best of the original trilogy. It was fun. It was enjoyable. It had energy.
What it had was the imagination. I think that Empire is actually the better film, but I think that A New Hope is, you know, the one that made people's eyes pop open and say, this is what I've been waiting for all my life.
Turns out Lucas was actually going through the curses of the damned making the film, but what wound up on screen did not reflect that.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of so all I can say is fine, but you see, I'm also and while I appreciate a lot of what J.J. Abrams did with his Star Trek, I don't trust him.
One of the raps against J.J. Abrams is that essentially he takes, you know, the stuff that the fans drool over and twists it 90 degrees and then just sort of feeds it back to you. So, you know, it's here's Khan again. Look, instead of Spock saying a certain line that he said in Wrath of Khan, Kirk would say that line, and it's like, the fans go, ooh, well, now I see. And
yeah,
you know,
except one thing, you just don't cast Khan with Benedict Cumberbatch. You just don't do it. All what you do is you change the character from Khan into, and I've said this a number of times, Flynn.
Well, but
you remember
here again,
Flynn, right? I think I've mentioned this.
This is the thing, is that the reason why it's Khan is because Abrams wanted that resonance for the fans.
Yeah, well, you know what? It didn't work.
It worked a little bit for me. I will say that. I do understand it's sort of a gimmick. It's, you know, it's...
But that's neither here nor there. We're talking Star Wars.
We're talking Star Wars, but already, you know, like, if you track what the fans are saying online, they say, oh, he's bringing back the Cantina Band.
R2... The fans were saying that Peter Capaldi would never be back in Doctor Who, that they killed off Jenna Coleman, that this and that. The fans know bupkis.
No, but it is the case that he is bringing back the Cantina Band.
That's
it is
nice.
The fact that they've got a new type of R2-D2. I think it's called B9. You know, which is essentially is going to be this trilogy's R2-D2. You know, so here again, he's doing the same thing. He's taking the stuff that the fans love, twisting it 90 degrees, and feeding it back to you. But
doesn't
the thing
make
is
it
that
a good Star Wars movie.
It. What? Sorry?
None of that makes it a good Star Wars film.
Well, what will make it a Star Wars film is
a good Star Wars film.
A good Star Wars film. I think, you know, more than Lucas was able to, I think J.J. Abrams is fully able to deliver what we think of as a Star Wars film. I think he's able to deliver a fun adventure with action and wit.
I agree with that, as long as you don't think about it too hard, which is in keeping with George
you
Lucas.
With the entire sum of the Star Wars franchise, you shouldn't be thinking about it too
much. Well, no, because Star Wars isn't science fiction. It's science fantasy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I will give it that. However, I will not give that to Star Trek.
Right.
And therein lies a problem.
Okay. Abrams did fine with Star Trek.
I think he did okay, but if we were to give it any time to discuss, none of it makes sense.
Can I point out since we're running low on time,
have 90 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. Let me point out two other films. One is coming October 16th, Crimson Peak, which is Guillermo del Toro getting back to horror. And that's what I'm looking forward to. The other is a smaller film, November 27th, called Midnight Special. And this is, the log line is, a father and son go on the run after the dad learns his child possesses special powers. The reason why I'm interested in it is that it's directed by Jeff Nichols, who did the very excellent Take Shelter. a few years ago. And so this should be one to watch.
Okay, very good. Okay, in 30 seconds, television.
Television. Right now, even as we talk, every Sunday, I think at 11:30, Rick and Morty on Adult Swim. It is one of the best animated series that they've ever run on that network. It is.
I would point out the importance of a couple of shows, such as one called Minority Report.
I'm curious.
And another one called The Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, that's coming to Amazon.
In October.
Curious about Minority Report. It seems to be following a trend of taking science fiction films with rather restricted concepts and turning them into procedurals. So Minority Report is about a precog who goes into actual
Minority Report
work.
The you know, was a procedural.
Right. That's true. That's true.
You
but,
know, to begin with.
Yeah. The other is Limitless, which was the film was about a guy who was able to take this pill, which would increase his intelligence.
But you see,
the TV show is the same, except it's increasing his intelligence now for the FBI.
Let's see if they can increase the intelligence for the audience. and then not exactly genre, but within, there's Fargo, the second season. And this is the trend
what the TV show is that all of us are looking forward to? The Muppets.
I'm not so much. I enjoy the Muppets. I'm a big Muppets fan, and that's the reason why I'm fearful of this show. Because this isn't the Muppets. This is, you know, a comedy of a reality show, and they're playing around with the concept.
Right. Oh. It is being done by the people out of, or some of the people out of the Big Bang Theory, though.
Yeah, well, you see, I like the guy who did a show called The Muppets. I like Henson, you see. Okay, but these other science fiction shows, which are really science fiction, Minority Report and so forth, most importantly, Man in the High Castle, they're doing something very, very, very interesting, which is they are taking existing properties and they are changing them to befit new storylines. They're not doing the novel, The Man in the High Castle. They're just using the universe. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Fargo. It's got nothing to do with the movie, except the suitcase. Anyhow,
I'm sorry.
We've got a minute, and I've got another show.
Okay.
I would love to, but I can't.
Okay, I go.
Okay, thanks. We'll do this again soon.
Please.
Take care.
Take it easy.
Thanks, Dan Persons. Okay. This has been Hour of the Wolf. I've got another one coming. And because it's pre-recorded, I don't have too much choice in that matter. In fact, what I'm going to have to do, because I am basically programming the next plus 3 hours when I hit the play button in 15 seconds, is wrap everything up by saying this has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you so much for listening. Now here's how we will segue. Check this out. I said that offline. Sorry. Ken Liu will be recorded here next week. The week after that, live will be Ellen Datlow. This coming Tuesday, please, we want to see you at
the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, free admission, 388 Atlantic Avenue. Go to the Facebook page or go to my website for more information. Okay. Gee, that sounds like Hour of the Wolf is starting. And indeed it is. So, what... I'm going to make sure everything else is turned off. I'm really confusing myself. Three computers, two players. There we go. This, one of my readers on Tuesday will be Michael Swanwick. The other will be Rajan Khanna. But this now is an old Hour of the Wolf from, 2008. With the aforementioned Michael Swanwick. We'll be announcing phone calls and taking them and all that, but it's a recording. So never mind. Following that will be Project Censored coming your way at 5 a.m. Thank you for listening. If you want to write me, it's jim@ourwolf.com. Have a great morning. Take care. And be good to each other. I'm going to listen to me intro, and then I'm out of here. It's nice to do an intro twice in a show, isn't it?
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Hour of the
Wolf. This is Hour of the Wolf.
A Saturday morning
Wednesday night
to science fiction.
Dedicated to science fiction.
Fantasy.
Fantasy.
Enchantment.
Enchantment.
Yes.
And yes.
The imagination.
The imagination. My name is Jim Freund.
A show long, long awaited by me, at least. And I'm sure
it's in the past.
Yes. Live in studio. Michael Swanwick.
Indeed. Well, Michael's actually been back since then, and he will be here live next Tuesday. Write me. jim@ourwolf.com will tell you all about it. Hope to see you then. So keep on listening to my show, and have a good morning for the last show. Or both. Good night. That's my weakness now.
Love, 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 look what you've done to me. The things I never miss, the things I can't resist. Oh, love, 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 isn't it plain to see? I just had a change of heart. What can it be? Eyes of blue, but he's got eyes of blue. I think he knows just what it's raining for. He likes a long good night, and I never had a long good night, but he likes a long good night, so that's my weakness now. And he likes put the stutter, and I never can put the stutter, but he likes the put the stutter, so that's my weakness now. And he likes button the tada tada, and I never can button the tada tada, but he likes put the stutter. That's my weakness now. What more? What more? Oh, I think he knows what patata is for. He likes pututaru. I never get but a pututaru, but he likes the pututaru. So that's my weakness now.
And let that be a lesson to you about Bootleg Hooch. This is WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Get a couple of quick announcements out of the way. Last week's New York Review of Science Fiction reading with Michael Swanwick and Judith Berman went exceedingly well. And unfortunately, you will not this year likely hear Michael's reading, because it would be one long bleep, not the little bleeps we had for Lucius Shepard a couple of weeks ago, but just one long, you know, tone. Not Michael's fault, but the fault of our current official reaction to the Federal Communications Commission. You will, however, hear the Judith Berman part of that. So to make up for that, Michael will be here, is here this morning, and more on that in a moment. If you enjoy the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, and you wouldn't dare go to the evil, terrible, horrible competition, which is this Wednesday at 7 p.m. Get there early because they fill up at the KGB bar, as run by Ellen Datlow and Gavin Grant. You wouldn't do that to go see Daniel Brown and Jeff Klima will be there, because this is all surrounding Electric Velocipede, a wonderful small press magazine.